James.
Welcome to the Delling Pod with me, James Dellingpole. And I know I always say I'm excited about this week's special guest, but before we meet him, let's have a word from one of our sponsors. Sina Crisps. I used to eat loads and loads of crisps in my normie days, and then of course I discovered that they're all cooked in toxic seed oils, and so I pretty much gave up. The people behind Sina have come up with a brilliant idea of cooking crisps not in seed oils, but in coconut oil, so they're actually not harmful to you. And they also taste... good. Was that a good idea to eat my crisps in the middle of the advert? I'm not sure. Anyway, I just want to make something absolutely clear. Just because I'm starting to do crisp adverts doesn't mean I'm about to become the new Gary Lineker. That's a joke that will go completely over the head of non-British viewers, and I envy those who don't know who Gary Lineker is. They're organic, they are not ultra-processed food, no seed oils, and you can find them at www.sinacrisps, that's S for sugar, I-N-A, crisps.com.
Use the code James for 15% off your order.
So, again, I'm not Gary Lineker, and I envy those of you who don't know who Gary Lineker is. I'm advertising crisps, but they are good crisps. They taste good, and they're cooked in coconut oil. So check out Sina Crisps.
Use the code James, J-A-M-E-S, that's me, for 15% off your order.
Welcome to the podcast, Hvorje Morich. Is that right?
You got it. You got it, yeah.
I did. So, do you know what? I really didn't like... I didn't want to be like one of those American podcasters that starts the podcast with this elaborate, I'm trying to get your name right, and they sort of... And I've just gone and done it. I've just done one of those podcast intros. But you must get this all the time, and it must be very boring for you.
No, I don't mind it, because I've lived around the world, and you just get used to it. And, you know, still friends to this day, colleagues in the podcast space that I talk to continue to butcher my name. But, you know, what are you
going to do? It's Croatian, is it?
It literally means Croatian. It literally means Croat.
Does it?
Croatia in the Croatian language is called Hrvatska. So you see the first three letters, HRV, the roots, Hrvatska. Hrvoje. So basically my name is my country, Croat. Yeah, so.
And is it an advantage having your native tongue so complicated? I mean, is learning English a piece of piss after Croatian?
Well, it's a complicated story. So I'm born in the US, Chicago. I'm also, I moved back and forth because my parents were immigrants. So I'm citizen of both and fluent in Croatian. And yeah. I'm also a Mexican citizen, so I got three passports. So.
And did you flee to? Are you one of? Because there are quite a lot of awake podcasters types in Mexico. Are you one of the sort of the refugees from the kind of the collapse?
No, I came way before most. So I came in 2010. You know, I was listening to some of your, I mean, I listened to your podcast from time to time, and yeah, I came like way back in 2010, and I finished my graduate studies in Geneva, and then I studied diplomacy, and then I was offered a gig at one of the top teaching institutions here in Mexico. I said, why not? And also at that time, because I understood even back then that you have more freedom in failed states like Mexico, so.
Yeah. I think you do. I think you're right. Because they can't, they haven't got the apparatus to crush and police you so effectively, have they?
Although that is changing. That is quickly changing. You know, way back in 2020, I interviewed the renowned Jewish American historian, Edwin Black, he calls the social credit system the algorithm ghetto, you know, and he compares it to the ghettos that Jews were put into and others. And it's happening fast, and some things are happening faster in Mexico than in other countries. Like they're going to shut off our phones in 2 months if we don't register them with an identity document. They're bringing in the CURP Biométrico, which is the biometric Mexican national ID, without which you won't be able to buy or sell effectively anything. Get married, get divorced, buy property, sell property, put your kids in school, pension, banking, nothing. Report your taxes, pay your taxes. And the Sheinbaum just announced, you by the end of the year, again, we don't know how they're going to implement it, but by the end of the year, they don't want you to be able to buy gasoline for cash, only card or digital payments. And so the thing is, with this global technocracy, or algocracy, as I also like to call it, they're leapfrogging now with the technologies. So the third world can jump ahead of even the first world, because all you need is internet availability. And, you know, there's many ways to do that. Fiber optics, Starlink is widely available in Mexico. So if you got internet, everyone's got a smartphone, and then all you need are the apps for control. And at every choke point, you know, banking, gasoline, they just set up the checkpoints and you're good to go for the dystopia.
Whoa.
And that's one thing, you know, I try to be really honest. I listened to one of your guests recently. Here's a fun fact. You saw the chaos in Mexico not long ago. I went to church that Sunday. This is like, what, a month or two ago? So my phone is off and we're driving to church. Literally 30 seconds outside my door, we encounter the first narco blockade, a car that's been charred, burned. You know, the narcos will tell people to get out of their cars and then burn them. 30 seconds from my house, and then we passed three more. We passed a total of four narco blockades on our way to church. And my wife was like, turn around, go home. And I'm like, you know, I'm from Chicago, the murder capital of America. When I was, you know, we had the war in Croatia. I'm like, we're already on our way to church. Let's just go to church. And but my point is, it's a bit more nuanced than some of these freedom podcasters say. So it's like, yes, it wasn't as bad as the news said, but I'm driving through narco blockades. And on the way back home from church, no one is on the streets. And there was a real danger that they could have stopped our car, told us to get out and burned our vehicle. So it's kind of like the truth is always more nuanced, you know. So,
yes, I've been in those situations where you could be perfectly fine, or you could die. And it's on the whim of some hopped up kid, basically. I've had it in Africa. I had it in the LA riots. And it's weird. Civil unrest is in conventional warfare, the lines are sort of often fairly well delineated, the front line, you know, and there's no man's land in between. But in civil unrest, everywhere is potentially dangerous.
Yeah, and I also thought this situation is a bit of an Operation Gladio style event, you know, that maybe the U.S., because, you know, people have said the cartel, Nueva Generación Jalisco, that 80% of their arms come from the U.S., 20% from Israel. They get training in Ukraine, Israel, and U.S., and so there's obviously links to the U.S. deep state. And so was this sort of like a Gladio type event? There's different theories that I have. One was either they're trying to clean up the cartels, their competition to, again, the end game is a technate, North American Union. So they want to clean up the cartels to make them a bit more refined in their practice to integrate Mexico into the North American Union. Or they're creating this chaos as the pretext for U.S. Invasion. So again, it's not as clear cut, but you know, the mainstream tells you freak out. The alt media says everything's fine, and both of those are not true. I would say they're both true if you combine them. It's like, yeah, there's a bit of chaos, but if you're wise, you'll be able, you know, to manage your way through it. So
yeah, I'm sensing a sort of a theme emerging in this discussion. I mean, I wanted to talk to you about, as a starting point anyway, that brilliant and long, I might say, article It's a problem, isn't it? One does get a bit prolix on Substack when you've got no editor saying. And it's quite, I quite enjoy that. I quite enjoy long digressive pieces. Can you remember what the title of the piece was?
I've got it here. Basically, multipolarity as world government 3.0 and its Pied Pipers.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, before we go there, I want to find out a bit more about where you're coming from and how you got to be where you are. Because, I mean, if you were trained in Switzerland at a Swiss university, presumably there was a period in your life where you were essentially a normie.
Yeah. So, you know, I studied history and education, my bachelor's in Illinois, in U.S., and basically fell down the rabbit hole in the early 2000s with Loose Change documentary 9/11. And, you know, later I'd been on TNT radio for 2 years, and then I had Jason Burmes replace me, and he was part of the, it's funny how the, you know, everything comes full circle. Jason Burmes helped produce Loose Change, that, you know, one of the most seen documentaries on the internet, which talked about 9/11. And so, you know, I went through all that process, 9/11, Alex Jones, you know, I had a viral interview. I was the first to talk to Francis Boyle in 2020, and that interview went viral. And then the next day, my face is on the front page of InfoWars, and Alex Jones doing a play-by-play of my interview with Francis Boyle. And then, you know, we all went down that rabbit hole. Edward Griffin, Federal Reserve, 2011, he takes me out to lunch because I was volunteering. I was passing through California.
Oh, you lucky fella.
You know, Ron Paul, I got to meet him a couple years back and interview him. So it's kind of like I went down that rabbit hole as a consumer, as an audience. And then I got in the arena, so to speak, to use Roosevelt, Teddy Roosevelt's, you know, man in the arena, threw my hat in the ring by starting a podcast later on. But I went down the rabbit hole in the 2000s. And then, you know, I did Peace Corps Mongolia. I lived in New York in the Gobi, and then, you know, visited China some 20 years ago. And then did my 1 year graduate at the Geneva School of Diplomacy. And by then I was already awake. And it was interesting because I mean, and I took that opportunity because I got to be a staff assistant, you know, like an intern, a fancy way of saying intern, at the United Nations and the European Union during the fake swine flu pandemic of 2009. So I was actually in the WHO, you know, Margaret Chan, Director General, walking right beside me. And I knew back then it was a fake swine flu pandemic. I was working for this Czech mission to the UN. And my point is that I took that as an opportunity to sort of walk in the belly of the beast.
Yeah.
You know, I had, just give me a second here. I have Lutz's Trust, I'm sure you're familiar with, Lucifer Publishing.
Love them.
They've got an office in London, New York, and Geneva. And their Geneva office was right across from the old League of Nations, the current UN Geneva, where I was, our school was just down the street. And I attended one of their meetings. You know, I have the 2009.
Did you?
I went in, you know, it was open. I'm like, oh, I'm going to come in as like an agent. And, you know, here they talk about Prometheus and Lucifer. And, you know, they promote Lucifer as the good guy. He's the Prometheus. He's bringing us knowledge. He's trying to help us.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that was a bit of my experience. And some of my professors were like Rockefeller, CIA, globalists promoting world government. And a few understood what was going on, but they were kind of, you'd have to talk to them outside of the class because they didn't want to lose their jobs. And there was actually a scene with one of my Hungarian professors. We were at the Geneva train station on a rainy day talking about Bilderberg and secret resistance networks, and it's like a scene out of Mission Impossible. So anyways, yeah.
Whoa, are the secret resistance networks?
Well, I mean, just from his personal, like, you know, intellectually, you know, because wherever everyone is at, you know, you being in the UK, me here in Mexico, and here, I was in Croatia last summer for the entire summer, and I was able to quickly tap into the top dissident intellectual network. You know, for example, Krešimir Mišak, he's had a show on national Croatian TV for 20 years. You know, I interviewed him in Croatian and we hung out. And then I met younger prominent dissident intellectuals fighting all of this stuff. So that's kind of what I mean by, you know, and wherever, you know, my professor in Switzerland, there are all these local networks, you know, trying to resist the tyranny being implemented in their area. So,
right. Okay. So I'm very glad I asked you that question. It would have been very remiss of me not to, because, like, what was it like going into these, well, working for the WHO and going to the Lucis Trust meetings? I mean,
Well, I mean, for on the one hand, I kind of knew what was going on. You know, the basics, as we all do, like, this is the world government. You know, I'm a Christian, so I'm looking at it from the biblical worldview that, you know, the UN, this entire infrastructure represents, you know, like Book of Daniel, Book of Revelation. You've got the spiritual dimension, right? Lucis Trust is a UN NGO officially affiliated, I think, the ECOSOC. And then even if you go to the UN Geneva, you can look at the map of the building. And, you know, the coffee lounge is, I think, in the shape of a serpent. And I think on the actual map, it says Serpentine Lounge. And you think, like, and you think, because I can't remember now, but it's either like the nickname that everyone calls it, Serpentine Lounge, or it actually, that's what it's officially called. So it's like, that's all out in the open. And, you know, I was kind of nervous at times as well, because I was told to make copies and do, like, during one of the globalist meetings, and I had to go hand copies to them while they're formulating the unified EU report for the WHO. But yeah, it was just interesting to walk those halls. And I think, and that was before I started a podcast. And I think one reason I wanted to do it was so nobody can call me crazy talking about these things. You know, because you start talking about Lucifer Publishing, Lucis Trust. Like, I'm a crazy Christian conspiracy theorist. I'm like, no, I'm not. I was there, you know? And it's like, I got the documents. So, yeah.
Isn't this one of the interesting things about how the norm is, for want of a better word, are so utterly brainwashed that even when you have this organization with a registered headquarters called the Lucis Trust, formerly called the Lucifer Trust, yeah, I think it was.
Lucifer Publishing.
Named after, I mean, was it just like they just plucked a name from the ether and just decided to name it after the chief fallen angel? Or do you think maybe that they believe two things simultaneously, that yes, there does seem to be evidence that this organization exists. At the same time, it cannot possibly mean what it clearly says it means, because that would be crazy. I mean, they'd never do that.
Yeah, and you know, in my article, you know, I went on a bit of a journey, but I don't usually write articles because I don't have time, because I focus on the podcast, but I do eventually want to write more articles. But I mentioned Jazz Coleman of the UK's Killing Joke. And I was a fan of a lot of that type of music, but I've also been attracted to people of higher intellect, wherever they're coming from. And Jazz is an occultist. And, you know, I saw Killing Joke perform in Chicago in 2003. And in a lot of his music, he talks about the New World Order, right? He wrote the song, I Am the Virus, before COVID, FEMA camps, all that sort of stuff. And so he's an occultist. So he's kind of attuned a bit to the New World Order. I almost got him on my podcast during COVID because he was living in Mexico, I think around 2020, and his agent was scheduling, because he was giving some interviews about the New World Order, and then he had a boating accident and he had to go back to UK. But my point was, he himself has in articles and on his Facebook has confirmed all of this stuff. And he talks about how Tavistock, where when he started his band, the building where he lived in the UK was stocked with Tavistock engineers. And he effectively said that, yeah, we were kind of like, you know, this was all manufactured by Tavistock. And he says in his interviews, one of his goals, their goals, is to destroy Christianity, to bring in this sort of new age system. But I forget what your original question was, to go back.
Doesn't really matter. we can just ramble. So since you mentioned Jazz Coleman, he's obviously an insider. But does he when he talks about this stuff, what is his take? Is it like, yeah, it's kind of bad, but there's nothing we can do about it? Or is it, yeah, but this is kind of good, really?
I think it's that. I forgot. So my point was, and I've posted it on my feeds when I came across it, but I recently learned that Lutz's Trust commissioned Jazz Coleman to write their Great Invocation music. And you find it on their actual website. In 2019, Lutz's Trust published an essay from Jazz. He wrote something called the Gnostic Mass for the Lutz's Trust and the Great Invocation, I think, because he also does orchestra music. And in that missive, he talks about we all need to come. He talks about oneism, you know, and as a Christian, Christians believe in dualism. There's creator and then there's creation. There's a separation. Oneism is all this new age Gnostic theosophy where all is one. You know, everything is one.
And that's the same in the Eastern religions as well, pretty much.
And that's where, the Eastern and theosophy and Gnosticism at all, and a lot of alt media. I've been saying for years now, I've been warning, you're seeing so much of alt media promoting Gnostic New Age theosophy, Luciferianism, which is effectively globalism. So how are we, if we're fighting from the bottom, we're supposed to be anti-globalists, but we're actually, we've been infiltrated, our ranks. And so Jazz in his missive actually says, we have to have this planetary consciousness, this 21st century beehive. He mentions technocracy and smart cities. And so either he's kind of resigned to this is where we're at, and he also seems to be sort of accepting of it. And he promotes the UN as the vehicle to sort of save the world. So to me, it just seems like, he's part of that theosophic globalist.
Gone down the Steve Hillage rabbit hole? Have you even heard of Steve Hillage?
No, I haven't.
I was like a lot of awake people, of my generation. I was a sort of rave kid. I used to go to the acid house raves and stuff and, get pulled up on E and look at the trippy visuals and there was so much one-eyed symbolism and stuff like that. I mean, they really bombarded us with occult messages. I'm just looking him up to see what it said about him. Steve Hillage, he had a band called, oh God, he was in Gong. Have you heard of Gong? Gong had an album called Camembert Electric. It was kind of experimental music from about the 1970s. It was a thing. It was quite sort of culty, but cool people were into it. And then during the sort of rave culture, if you went to an alternative rave, System 7 would quite likely be playing on one of the smaller stages. It was kind of, anyway, Steve Hillage, he comes from one of those families that, I don't know whether bloodlines necessarily, but his parents were, hold on, what does it say? Does it, early life? I mean, check out the early life. I suppose it doesn't mean much to if you don't know who System 7 are or who Steve Hillage is. But once one becomes awake, one realizes just how heavily infiltrated all these, any branch of the world which shapes human perception, be it the novels or music. And it's not just mainstream music, it's the underground as well is infiltrated. It's all infiltrated. I mean, you must have been down the Leonard Cohen rabbit hole.
I've heard, I love listening to his music and enjoyed it. Right. And you thought you did. You can tell me, I don't know specifically on Leonard Cohen, but there's a great ministry out of California called Good Fight Ministries, Pastor Joe Schimmel, and they produce wonderful documentaries. And they produced, I've got the physical right behind me, a 10-hour, They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll. And they find primary source material where you have the artists themselves either saying, yeah, we sold our souls to Satan, or episodes where Bono of U2, Bono Mephisto and all that. And U2 is like, when we wrote one of their mega hits, One, it all came together like in 5 minutes, you know, there was like a fifth presence in the room and you're thinking, okay. And just to your point, once you become aware, I'm sure everyone's familiar with Dave McGowan, Laurel Canyon, Weird Scenes yeah. Inside the Canyon. I read that book, I think a year or two ago, finally. And then you discover so many other artists that I've listened to. Like I was a huge fan of the Canadian rock band, the Tea Party, who kind of have continued on the style of Led Zeppelin. They mix world music with rock music. Jeff Martin, the lead singer. And I come to find out the guy is an actual disciple of Aleister Crowley. Like he's holding events. He lives in between Australia and Canada. He's holding events like Aleister Crowley occult events. And then Jimmy Page is a disciple, bought a Crowley's, I think, house on Lake Loch Ness. And then on and on, once you peer under the veil, yeah, so many are into this stuff.
Yeah. It is briefly on Leonard Cohen. I mean, I think I've done a Substack about this or something. He spent his early days on an island with the Rothschilds on Hydra. Hydra was the Greek island of Hydra was a, well, you must know Hydra. It was probably the equivalent of that West Coast scene that Dave McGowan talks about, just to kind of bottom the, you know, PSYOP Central. So he was Mossad, not Mossad stroke Illuminati. He was involved in sexually abusing this. Somebody contacted me in the comments and said, you know, yeah, I was a child at the same age as Leonard Cohen's adopted child, I think, and it was clear that child was completely messed up from being sexually abused, probably. But he would talk about it in his wry, ironic way, and everyone thought he was just being wry and ironic. You know, Field Commander Cohen. Well, he was inserted into the culture to do what he had to do. So it is everywhere. And I mean, I'm really glad that you share my Christian perspective. Because I think the people who don't understand the spiritual nature of this war we're fighting are kind of missing a huge chunk of the jigsaw.
Yeah, I mean, I know we've got a number of common friends and colleagues. I know you went out to Just Now Forum. Was it in Moldova with Yuri yeah. Roshka? I'm very friendly with him. He'd invited me out there at the time. I couldn't make it.
That would have been good.
I contributed virtually. He also says this, you know, he throws around the terms as well, metaphysical and all that. But I mean, just even going back to my article, like multipolarity, where I use as my guidebook the Bible. I mean, just the core extrapolations you have when it comes to prophecy. And so far, it's been right. You know, you look at the book of Daniel, where it talks about the dream. Nebuchadnezzar, the statue, and its four parts representing four empires. The legs are made of iron. That's the Roman Empire, which splits into two around the year, you know, 1054. And then you're down to 10 toes that are iron and clay. And then you've got I've got the book. It's on my shelf over there. Mankind at the Turning Point. Club of Rome publishes it and divides the world into 10 regions. And then it turns out that those regions are the blueprint for world government. And then you've got, again, these people in alt media promoting BRICS and multipolarity is going to save us. And I'm like, you know, I mean, I got so many piles of books here. It's like, you know, the idea of world government, you know, when they say world government, it's not like totalitarian world government, except for Russia or except for China. There's no exceptions. You know, there's no BRICS is not going to, BRICS is actually making us think we're taking a step back when actually we're stepping forward into world government. And so, as you say, I think if you don't have that spiritual sort of antenna, you're going to be completely off course when it comes to interpreting where we're going, you know.
Yes, I think you're right. In fact, I was actually inspired to write an article by your piece, which I didn't. Sometimes I start things and I don't finish them and then I go back to them. But I was summarizing your piece and I was saying, basically, they're all in on it. There are no good countries which are going to save them with their by providing a viable alternative, like Putin with his family values, they're going to show us the way.
No, I mean, I was, by the way, I've got my Putin mug here. I was in St. Petersburg in 2017 and I picked it up on the street. But Russia's implementing totalitarianism. The Max app, they've banned Telegram and what's, I mean, if you, this was my point in the piece. I've lived in Kazakhstan for 3 years, former Soviet Union, you know, 20% ethnically Russian or something. And I've been to Russia, spent a month there. Met Gorbachev. We spent 2 hours with Gorbachev in 2017. Vladimir Posner, the famous journalist, other Russian intellectuals and just Russians on the street. It's the same in any country. It's like, let's be real. You know, I call them now these sycophants, these people who have Stockholm syndrome, who defend Russia, and they're not even Russian or China or whoever. And for me, it's not like, I'm not attacking any particular country. Like here in Mexico, our government is a freaking narco estado. It's a narco government. You go to Croatia, my other country, it's a mafia state. They tried to steal my parents' house. They tried to, it was a mafia working within the government, together with the government, and they attempted to change the title, you know, take it from underneath my father and transfer the title to someone else, and then it's not your house anymore.
How did you stop that happening?
My parents, they got wind of it, and they went mad and AWOL, and you know, they went to the police, to all of the different offices, put in further safeguards. They stopped it, but they were told by the local police if they hadn't done it, it was possible they would have lost it. So now imagine me being a sycophant, be like, no, my Croatian government is amazing, you know, my Mexican government who's gonna like, literally I read stories where the Mexican police in my town are kidnapping and killing us. And some of them get arrested for kidnapping and killing. Like, what kind of Stockholm syndrome do you have to defend your government? And same thing for Russia. You talk to an average Russian. I've talked to them in Russia and Kazakhstan, and they grumble. They're like, yeah, it's just an oligarchy. They control, you know, just like in any country, it's an oligarchy. They take all the money. We're like the serfs, the plebs, just, you know, basically trying to survive. It's a corrupt mafia everywhere. Kremlin, Beijing. Brussels, that's the real, and I think that's a biblical worldview as well. You know, the Satan runs the show until Jesus comes back. And it's also, even if you don't want to talk about the Bible, it's just a realistic worldview. You know, if you, I'm a collectivism, I'm anti-statist, I guess, because you realize if all humans are sinful, and fallible and fallen by nature, what makes you, the state is just a higher expression of these humans coming together, made up of, you know, sinners. And so, yeah, I don't think there's any, no one's going to save us, politically speaking.
Yeah. This is I don't know about music to my ears, but I think we're thinking along the same lines. Because one of the things I try and explain to people who are missing this element is, look, humans, the cabal, the powers that be, whatever you want to call them, these guys are pretty clever. They're pretty devious. But to organize this on such a scale, with such attention to detail, you kind of need a sort of supernatural intelligence masterminding the show. And these people, they get demonic help. They get supernatural fire support. You know, they don't just sacrifice children to Satan for the shits and giggles. You know, they don't do it as a kind of random oh, it's not going to make any difference, but I will, just because it's tradition. You don't do that. You do this stuff because it works. Because Satan is, Lucifer's the prince of the air, that he's, according to John, he's the god of this world. So he has a certain ability to help you if you become one of his servants.
Yeah, most definitely. And you know, I think the other point is, you know, one point is Satan is an angel. He's been around, you know, when we think of human history, since the beginning of human history, you know, thousands of years. So as these, you know, elite dynasties come and go, the Rockefellers, you know, passes, Kissinger dies, and the show goes on. But, and there's a continuation from generation of elite family to generation. It's because of the devil, which is this real entity, and he doesn't die. And he's, you know, he's got time, so he can, through each generation, keep directing that same, because we see the trend, right? We go back, look at history, hundreds of years. It's that trend. League of Nations, United Nations, World Government 3.0, centralizing global power, installing global dictatorship. You know, that level of coordination. And I guess forgetting my other point. But, and then the other point is that, yeah, I'm tired of people accusing me or us of being blackpilled, like as if it's shameful or wrong. I'm like, yes, yes, I am blackpilled. I'm not ashamed of it anymore. And I'm tired of this hopium, this copium. Like, oh, you're so blackpilled. And I'm like, look, this is the reality of the situation. I have listeners of mine telling me, I like your analysis because, you know, in some ways it gives you comfort because you understand the situation. There's no longer really a mystery. You kind of understand. It's like a soldier, you know, in World War I or World War II who's on the field doing reconnaissance. You're not going to, like, the situation's bad and the enemy's advancing. You're not going to be like, you know, oh, this is blackpilled. I'm going to tell them in the back, you know, everything's fine. You know, what kind of idiot does that?
Yeah, you know, it boosts morale. If they knew how bad it was, they'd surrender.
But yeah. And so, you know, but ultimately I often say, yeah, I'm blackpilled. Someone in my listeners said they're multi-pilled. But what, I'm blackpilled and white-pilled because temporally speaking, you know, in this carnal world, it's blackpilling, but spiritually speaking, it's white-pilling. You know, Gandalf comes down from the hill. Jesus saves us. God wins. But, you know, if you don't believe in the Bible, well, yeah, for you, it's blackpilling, you know. But, you know, even okay, let's take the view of some of these New Agers in alt media. Why would they call me blackpilled? Because you believe everything's, we're all one and everything's a frequency. And when you die, you're just going to go back into the ether. So you can't, you're purple psychedelic pilled. So, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, I guess we should talk about that because we've been engaging in the sort of the foreplay so far. It is fairly clear to me that the alternative broadcasting space, whatever you want to call it, is heavily infiltrated by voices which, to varying degrees, are there to mislead, awake people, to corral them into pens, to lead them into false beliefs. I mean, I suppose the obvious example for me, I haven't been playing this game as long as you have. I'm still quite new to it. And I don't know whether you've ever seen the...
Global warming is a massive con. There is no evidence whatsoever that man-made climate change is a problem, that it's going to kill us, that we need to amend our lifestyle in order to deal with it. It's a non-existent problem. But how do you explain this stuff to your normie friends? Well, I've just brought out the revised edition of my 2012 classic book, Watermelons, which captures the story of how some really nasty people decided to invent the global warming scare in order to fleece you, to take away your freedoms, to take away your land. It's a shocking story. I wrote it, as I say, in 2011, actually, the first edition came out, and it's a snapshot of a particular era, the era when the people behind the climate change scam got caught red-handed, tinkering with the data, torturing till it screamed, in a scandal that I helped christen ClimateGate. So I give you the background to the skullduggery that went on in these seats of learning where these supposed experts were informing us, we've got to act now. I rumbled their scam. I then asked the question, okay, if it is a scam, who's doing this and why? It's a good story. I've kept the original book pretty much as is, but I've written two new chapters, one at the beginning and one at the end, explaining how it's even worse than we thought. I think it still stands up. I think it's a good read. Obviously I'm biased, but I'd recommend it. You can buy it from jamesdellingpole.co.uk/shop. You'll probably find that. Just go to my website and look for it, jamesdellingpole.co.uk. And I hope it helps keep you informed and gives you the material you need to bring round all those people who are still persuaded that, oh, it's a disaster, we must amend our ways and appease the gods, appease Mother Gaia. No, we don't. It's a scam.
Fairly clear to me that the alternative broadcasting space, whatever you want to call it, is heavily infiltrated by voices which, to varying degrees, are there to mislead, awake people, to corral them into pens, to lead them into false beliefs. I mean, I suppose the obvious example for me, I haven't been playing this game as long as you have. I'm still quite new to it. And I don't know whether you've ever seen I did a live event with David Icke. You've heard of David Icke, right?
I've seen, I think I saw, or I saw you post about it, and then he got angry or something, right?
Well, it was, okay, so at that stage I was thinking, yeah, David Icke, he's the granddaddy of conspiracy theorists, and he's gonna explain it all to me and tell me what's what, and it's gonna be a great conversation, and we're gonna get on like the house on fire. And we didn't, and it came as a real shock with me, because I want to get on. I really want to get on with people. I would never ever set up a podcast with a conversation with somebody in order to screw them over or with the. I'm trying to find out what we have in common. I'm trying to learn from people, and if somebody who I thought was a fraud or a wrong'un, I just wouldn't talk to them. Because it's an unpleasant experience. So I had the scales fell from my eyes live on stage in front of an audience, more than half of which were sort of Ikeistas. And so after that experience, I sort of started looking into David Icke's belief system. And I realized that however many true things he says to show his awake credentials to his audience, he's essentially a sort of Gnostic stroke. Well, he's a New Ager, really. He's pushing the New Age agenda, and that's his job.
Yeah. I mean, so this is why I'm careful, and I come at this measured. Like in my article, I will tend to just, I simply wanted to point out there's a pattern here. There are names. I don't know, you know, it's difficult to peer into the soul, the mind of somebody and their motivation. You know, human nature, we're all complicated. We're coming from different backgrounds, financially, whatever. So it's not as simple. And sometimes it's not good to jump the gun. But there's a clear, you know, open source information with a pattern here. And I know for a fact, some people are getting paid. Some are paid pipers. Others, you know, maybe they're just well-meaning and they've fallen into the space. So that's why it's a spectrum, as I call it. There's well-meaning people, maybe they drink the Kool-Aid. Then there's the second layer of people who are, there's a lot of narcissists in our field, right? They want ego, they want attention, so they want money, and they'll make compromises along that road. And then you have actual intelligence influence operations. And then on Icke, you know, I've been calling this out for at least 3 years. I've done a podcast on this where, you go to his Twitter feed, X feed, he's constantly attacking God, the God of the Bible, Jesus Christ. And as you said, you know, I can't in my own mind generally share him, because ultimately he's at odds with everything that I believe in. And in my view, he's also promoting globalism. And then you go through a lot of other alt media. They are like disciples. He's their guru, Icke. And I think there's different tiers to the deception, you know. And so I can't know if Ike is, he just maybe really believes in the Theosophy stuff. And, you know, if you read the Alice Bailey, I think early on he was actually a Blavatsky and Baileyan. But even in their own writings, you know, I had on recently Gary Kah, a Christian who wrote a book on the New World Religion. They say themselves that they will infiltrate everything, education, media, government, and slyly kind of operating as spies or agents promote this stuff. And, you know, I'll bring out another name. I'll get in trouble. Sometimes I guessed with her.
Well, do please.
On the Independent Media Alliance. But, you know, Catherine Austin Fitz, who's done so much great work. But I just cannot not point out. It just, it perturbs me because 95% of what she says is like what you and I say is spot on. And she was on Tucker Carlson for the second time recently. And for the second time, she closed by promoting Robert Templeton's book, New Science of Heaven, which I've downloaded, haven't read yet, but I've seen enough to know immediately. The thing is, she says she's Christian. So I have the thing like, you know, I cite a lot the work of Mark Passio, who's a former Satanist, and he's openly still some form of hermeticist or esotericist. So you know where he's coming from, but he's done great work on the occultocracy, as he calls it. But I don't like when people say they're one thing, but it becomes apparent, at least in my mind, that there's something else, because she's promoting this guy's book that says 99.9% of everything is plasma. I'm like, that's oneism. You know, if God and Earth and we, and it's, we're all one and we're all made of plasma. And then I found interviews of that author at Templeton. He's giving an interview to the Theosophical Society. He's talking about Blavatsky. He's talking about Gnosticism. And I'm like, wait a minute. You know, like I keep seeing this pattern repeat, whether it's the New Age stuff or whether it's the Multipolarista stuff or Pentagon Active Measures. I mean, Alex Jones is another example. I grew up watching the guy. He was part of my inspiration for my podcast. And then you see him years ago. He makes that documentary on Endgame, Blueprint for Global Enslavement, you know, down with the North American Union. Bilderberg, all that. Someone sent me a clip like last year where Alex Jones has on Patrick Byrne, who's openly reveals he's a CIA agent, and they're both promoting regime change in Venezuela to implement, they literally say, we should implement technocracy with blockchain, digital ID, biometric IDs. And I'm like, what? And now he's promoting like the North American TechNade and Go Trump. And I'm like, this guy is clearly, you know, controlled.
Yes. Opposition. Is he even the same person?
I mean, I don't go there because you can, I mean, they say the Russians say the same thing for Putin. Alex Jones, I mean, you can never really know. I tend to think he is probably the same person. He's just, again, morals. Look, I mean, look at all the examples of Tulsi Gabbard, RFK Jr. RFK Jr. is like, I'm going to end glyphosate when I get into power. And he gets into power. And he's like, no, we can't end glyphosate. You know, or Tulsi's like, we can't attack Iran. And once you get that ring of power, like Lord of the Rings, once you get that ring, there's a total 180. And I think it's a combination, again, of human nature. We are just so susceptible to power, money, and status. Plus, maybe some people are blackmailed. But I think even just human nature can explain a lot, you know? You're in that big boys club. I think of that movie with Robert Redford. Was it Woody Harrelson and Demi Moore? I think Indecent Proposal. You remember that? I think it was in the 90s. If I recall the plot correctly, the millionaire Redford tells Woody, let me take your wife out to dinner just one night. You know, I'll give you $1 million or something. And then once she tastes the high life, Demi, she's like, oh, Woody, sorry, I'm going to stay with, you know, this guy.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so but in a way, we know how movie land operates, and it's part of their, particularly a mainstream movie like that will be designed to condition us into certain belief systems. And I suppose the belief system there would be everyone has his price. And we're all, and I wonder about that cynicism. I mean, now I know that we're heavily infiltrated. I'm quite sparing with who I trust. I mean, I think I trust my brother and sister, just about, because they're Dellingpoles. And there's a few others. There's a few others that I trust. But I think you have to assume that even people you like and have spent quality time with are potentially compromised. And I've just contradicted the point I was actually going to make, which is, I think, and I these are the vibes I get from you. There are people in the truth movement whose sole mission is to find out the truth and are unbribable. I mean, I'd say there was literally no amount of money that you could give me to make me do bad, you know, to lie. Because lying in itself for me is ungodly. I think you actually damage the fabric of the universe by lying. It's against God's will. And my missions are the truth, beauty, and goodness. I mean, those are my watchwords. And I think for the best podcasters and writers, we're on the same page. No.
Yeah, I mean, and that's why I say, you know, one thing I don't like when people in this space say, I think it's suspect. Again, I think it's a biblical worldview. The Bible says, examine yourself constantly, forever, until you die. Examine others. Make sure they're, you know, on the right path. Test the spirits. You know, that's why you go to church to congregate. It's like a checks and balances. And I apply the same thing in the podcast space. So whenever anyone says, we should stop talking about each other and focus, I'm like, no. I think we should constantly be keeping tabs on each other in a healthy way. In a healthy way. It's because, you know, what I liken it to is like fumigation. We're fumigating. And like I said, be a measured approach. Don't knock people unless there's clear evidence. Like I use Alex Jones. Like I often say, eventually someone will out themselves because they will have to with the narrative, like in Alex Jones. I use him as the clearest example. When he's promoting technocracy, it's like, okay, dude, yeah, I mean, you know, obviously. Or you mentioned,
Before that, the real tell from Alex Jones was the way he allowed himself to get sued over Sandy Hook. Like, it was so transparent, the purpose of that legal action. It was designed to make the alternative realm stop questioning false flags and fake high school shootings and stuff, because look at what happened to Alex Jones. So it was designed for, well, I suppose partly to frighten people in the awake world, but also to create an even bigger division between awake world and normie world. Because in normie world, they're going, yeah, and these kids died, and it was so awful. And there are still people like Alex Jones who dare to say that those innocent kids weren't murdered by this insane gunman in this school that had been closed for 2 years and hadn't even got the heating on.
And it's also, you know, I you've probably interviewed as well Richard Poe, who's done great work, and I got the term learned from him first, sheep dipping. It's also that sheep dipping process where you're generating street credibility as a dissident, so people would, you know, believe you more. And you see this repeating over and over. Tucker Carlson, right now, he just came out a few days ago saying, oh, it's like the CIA or the government might bring charges against me. And, you know, I think Tucker Carlson is part of Laurel Canyon 2.0. It's clear as day. It's the operation is a bit more sophisticated now because we're on like level tier two or tier three. You know, Alex Jones type stuff is like low hanging fruit for level one psyops. Yeah. And then, you know, these other folks are like, you have to be more discerning. And, you know, I'll just mention in my article, again, I sometimes second guess myself, but I mentioned some of these multipolar people, many who I've interviewed. But I mentioned the mysterious bagman, you know, Marcel Jenke. He's this German guy and he's financed. I worked at TNT Radio. He's, you know, you could call him, he owns 20%. It's on their own website. All this stuff is open. He's given money to German filmmakers who are making anti-COVID stuff. He's given money to my Substack. He gave money to Derek. they're bros. You know, he was a founding member of my Substack. Since I've just given him a forever comp, because I, and this is the thing. Sometimes I guess wonder if I'm jumping the gun, but I just, you know, all I did was like, look, there's a guy with money, and he's giving, TNT, UK Column, myself, Derek Bros, German filmmakers. But you do detect there is a slight multipolar. He supports a lot of people who push sort of this multipolar technocracy, you know? And so I just thought, and I had a conversation with him, and I, you know, I can't recall very well, but it sounded like he was wanting to help me get on my podcast on another platform that he was creating. And I told him, and I think he said he would have helped me to register like a business proper. But then I'm wondering, would he then that way gain control over my podcast? And I said, look, I'm happy to have it distributed on another on a platform.
Yeah.
But I'm never like, no amount of, like you said, I'm always going to self-host it first, control the domain, control the feed. But I'm never going to post it anywhere else. I don't care how much money you give me. And so again, I just wanted to put it out there that there's a pattern of these influence networks. And then on top of that, I mentioned at the end of my article, this Pentagon active measures. They're writing articles about me being Russian agents, being a Russian agent. And I think this was important to bring up because there are these different influence networks, multipolar, Western influence networks, the MAGA Zionist neocon security state network, I mean, the New Age influence network. And the Pentagon one in 2024, July, they wrote the article of complete lies, saying I'm a Russian agent. August of 2024, they raid the house of Scott Ritter, you know, who I'd also interviewed, but he's a real, you know, multipolarista. And then September of 2024, Tenet Media, you know, Dave Rubin, Tim Pool, the government comes after them saying you guys were unknowingly receiving Russian money. So I'm like, there's a clear pattern. They write a hit piece on me in July. They raid Scott Ritter's home the next month. And then the month after that, they attack podcasters saying they're Russian media. Like that pattern tells you that these are Pentagon operations in social media. Like a lot of those accounts were anonymous accounts, but then I see them being amplified by James Lindsay, Stephen Coughlin, who has ties to the security state. And I'm like, and they're openly malicious and lying, and they're coming after the multipolaristas. And so sometimes I'm like, I don't know what's going on, but something here is definitely going on, you know.
Do you think there's a war between at the highest levels, a power struggle?
There always is. I mean, even Christian writers have said, you know, a lot of the principalities are run by, let's say, you know, fallen angels or whatever, demons, their realms. But, you know, it's even in their nature as well as ours to be narcissistic and greedy. And so I think even in the spiritual realm amongst themselves, there's factional infighting as there is, you know, amongst Russian oligarchs and Chinese oligarchs and European oligarchs and American oligarchs. And so it's not like they're all completely on the same page, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. You mentioned Tucker. I mean, probably like me, I find him very charming, great to listen to. He's fluent. He's intelligent. I like his delivery. He's, you know, he feels like your guy, but I do share your reservations. But with somebody like Tucker, when he says so much stuff that we like, well, I suppose Catherine Austin Fitz is another example of this. What do you think Tucker's, if he has a nefarious purpose, what is it? Is it multipolarity?
I think that's part of it. You know, I recently had Yuri Roshka on, and he explained, that was an interesting story. He met Tucker's father in the 90s in Moldova. When he was a politician, he met Tucker Carlson's father, who was working at that time for the same American propaganda, you know, Voice of America or whatever. Yeah. And so that was absolutely fascinating little history. And I think we can just look to the past for some examples, like Alex Jones. I think part of it is initiating us sort of into the occult, because, you know, what are the New Age? Bailey talks about the externalization of the hierarchy. Basically, you know, she's trying to flip the script and tell us, you know, Lucifer is a good guy. And, you know, in their own literature, I subscribe to their newsletter. They're always, when there's a Davos meeting or UN, they're like, let's send seeds, rays of light to Klaus Schwab and World Economic Forum and hope they succeed. And they say that Satan is here, the Antichrist. They say the Christ is here. You're just not prepared to accept him, you know, because you've got your preconceived notions that he's a bad guy. And so basically their job is to make, to break down our walls and to make us accept him, you know, through this externalization of the hierarchy, ascended masters. And then going back to Tucker, so I think that's part of the job of some of these occult type people in alt media to initiate us into this, because, you know, we'll defeat the New World Order and there's going to be the Great Awakening. But in fact, the Great Awakening is the real New World Order. And there have been many people talking about this for years. Like Donnie Darkened is this big X account. He doesn't comment.
Yeah, I thought he was a psyop.
He may be. You know, I've interviewed him on TNT radio. I think a lot of what he said was good. But again, this is the thing. You can never know most of the time for certain. And then, you know, this Chinese professor, I think it's clear as day, this Chinese professor that just came out of nowhere, he's manufactured. I mean, I know how much time it takes to write an article. I had to do less podcasts. My weekly analysis, I had to push off. You cannot be throwing out lectures left and right, you know, recording it, preparing it. It's not possible. You know, there's a team behind this guy. And I think a lot of it is Western. A lot of this stuff is coming from Western globalism. So even the multipolaristas, I question whether some of them maybe are receiving actually funds from like NATO and Pentagon, because you see how they are then used as forms of entrapment. Oh, you wrote an article for RT or you know, you got money from some this Eastern source. Now you're a Russian agent, you're deplatformed, you're fine, you're going to jail. So it's really unclear. And then you've got that old idea as well of convergence, right? You've interviewed Rurik Skywalker. I've interviewed him.
Yeah.
You know, he's an anti-Christian occultist, but I still appreciate his geopolitical globalist analysis. And, you know, he often talks about convergence theory. So maybe a lot of these intelligence services are working together behind the scenes. I've heard stuff like that as well.
But to what end?
Again, convergence to bring us into East and West to have this world state. And, you know, that's part of my argument in the article. It's clear that this move towards the world state has been primarily led by the Western globalism. You know, Europe, you know, whatever, Vatican, Brussels, London, Washington, because we've had the most advanced economy, infrastructure, you know, the Anglo-American establishment, all the Cecil Rhodes and all that. They've been writing about world union since the 1800s, not Russia and China. And so now the goal is to, you know, you might check this guy out. He's 86-year-old British former intelligence, Nicholas Hager. I just came across his work.
Okay.
He wouldn't come on my podcast. His assistant said he's writing 3 books at the moment, age 86. But he's saying that you have this Western New World Order called the Syndicate. And of course, you have like a Russian New World Order, but they're much smaller, and that effectively what they're trying to do is incorporate the Global South to get them on board to this world state. And that's what BRICS is all about. Those countries are not developed, so you have to develop the technocratic infrastructure, and then, you know, so they can have digital ID, so they can have QR codes, yeah, and all that.
Yes.
15-minute cities. And then once you've developed the Global South, that other half of the world, you just plug them in and we have a global technocratic government. And so, and then I guess back to your earlier point of Tucker, well, Alex Jones, for, you know, his first 10, 15 years, he's telling us truths. So he's getting us onto his farm. But then at some point later, like a Pied Piper, he'll take us, we've trusted him, we're following him now, and then he's going to take us into the woods. And that could be like a Tucker Carlson thing. You've got to build up first the following, and then when it's the time, take us into the woods for, you know, culling. So,
yeah, Yeah. It's why I'm it's not the only reason why, but it's why I'm suspicious of David Icke, that it was as if he was inserted into the very early on into the discussion in order to capture early adopters of the of being red pilled or whatever, of people being awake. So
Icke was there to grab them early. But I also wrestle with, like, some of these people, though, when you still listen to them, they sound so authentic, like Alex Jones or Tucker, you know, and they sound so authentic. And my biggest question is, like, what's the motivation for them to be taking us, you know, away from the truth? And sometimes it could be the case where these people simply really believe what they're saying and the system just comes to them and just gives them additional support and amplification. So it doesn't, this is why I said it's a spectrum. So it doesn't, David Icke could actually, you know, be this new age theosophist who wants to bring about this, you know, satanic world government, or he could simply be like, that's what he actually believes. And you know how Satan kind of helps you along, the path.
I think you're letting Icke off lightly, because I don't think you've studied him as thoroughly as
no, like I said, I could be wrong. So
I get your I totally get your broader point, and I think it's I was writing this piece. I think my piece was going to be called "How to Spot a Wrong'un," and it was going to be my own take on how you do spot a wrong'un. And I think one of the points I was going to make a list of tells, and one of them is pointing the finger, trying to sabotage, undermine other podcasters in your field. I think most of our audiences, your audience, my audience, for example, if they've got suspicions about a podcaster, they'll stop listening to him. They'll listen to him with much more skepticism than before. I mean, I remember when I was, for example, you're right when you say they always reveal themselves in the end. When I was trying to make up my mind what to think about, the guy who was in, who went into the Chilean embassy for a while, what's he called? Julian Assange, yeah. And I think, you know, there were people saying, yeah, but he's great and he does this and he's very brave and blah, blah, blah. When I heard Julian Assange sort of poo-pooing 9/11 conspiracy theory, you know, I was thinking, well, sorry, mate, you've just wiped out any credibility you may have. Whereas if I heard somebody talking about flat earth, I you know, that for me is not a deal breaker either way. I mean, some people think it, well, you know, there's a firmament and we're living in a flat world, and which is probably my view, but I wouldn't use that as a kind of damning tell, in the same way I would certain other. I think there are tells out there that experience spotters can.
I also do feel sometimes the flat earth is part of a security state. What do you call it? PSYOP. And you know, one pattern I specifically noticed through COVID was all of a sudden you get the no virus stuff, the flat earth, the no nukes, and a lot of those people again are new agers, the majority. And but I said, I think, like, whether it's 9/11 or flat earth, I think you need an accumulated amount of evidence. And you know, I believe there are well-meaning people who maybe haven't fully gone to 9/11 or don't want to go there. But you know, someone was telling me recently.
I don't know about that one.
For me, it goes back to, again, like, human nature. Someone was telling me, I haven't verified it, but for example, Patrick Wood. I think you've interviewed him. I have Technocracy.
Yeah.
So I like the guy. You know, he says he's a Christian. I believe he's a genuine Christian, and he's great on Technocracy and all of that sort of stuff. But you know, he holds to a certain, I think I'm trying to deduce here, a certain strain of, you know, biblical world view when it comes to Israel and all that. I don't think.
Oh, does he?
I am assuming, you know, someone told me that.
The Scofield Bible type view.
Yeah. I mean, but again, I don't think the thing is like I don't think he's like read the Scofield thing. I think he's just, you know, part of that more mainline Israel biblical worldview. And someone said that he kind of toes the official line on 9/11. And I can be forgiving in that sense. You know, I don't think it's like, I think it's just part of his worldview and he's got a myopia and he doesn't want to go there, but he's great on globalism and technocracy. And so again, grace, what does the Bible talk about? Grace and giving people grace. And so again, I think it's a spectrum. So
yeah,
and I don't want to throw stone, you know, the quote,
yes, he let him who without sin cast the first stone. I'm with you. Can I just tell you I have an even more conspiratorial view on flat earth, which is that when I hear people saying, I think flat earth is a conspiracy invented by the CIA or whatever to discredit us, I see that as a sign that they are themselves part of the conspiracy, because I think that there were certain traits, I would say, among the truly awake. And you've passed the test, by the way. I'm totally not doubting you at all. It's something to do with authenticity. But part of that authenticity is that because we've all had this tremendous culture shock of at some point realizing that everything we were taught about the world is potentially fallacious, we're not so dogmatic in our belief system as to take adamantine positions. So, for example, yeah, I'm probably a flurfer, but it's not what I'm going to have engraved on my gravestone. You know, if somebody comes along tomorrow and demonstrates to me clearly that no, actually, we do live in a spinning globe where the water doesn't fall off somehow, I go, well, okay, fine. And I think that, I mean, I noticed what one of the other chaps who's written an angry piece about how to spot compromised people, the chap who had a go at me for going on my trip to Russia with the Orthodox patriarchy, and he seems to be particularly hung up on exactly how 9/11 was, you know, about how the buildings were brought down. He's very dogmatic and rejects everyone else who doesn't think the right thing. And I'm thinking, I really don't care. I mean, I know enough to know that it wasn't brought down by a man in a cave. I know that George W. Bush and the entire, you know, Dick Cheney and etc., they were all in on it. Yeah, there was Israeli involvement and stuff. That's enough for me. I don't need to nail my colours to the mast of any particular theory about whether the planes that struck the Twin Towers existed, or whether they were holograms, or no, this is just like, this is for the birds. Doesn't matter. One just needs to know the overarching nature of the operation, which is that it was a false flag. It was America's new Pearl Harbor. It had a purpose. But beyond that, I'm not going to...
So I actually share your view here, and I'm actually friendly with the guy who wrote that piece on you. And this is the thing where and I'm kind of like you, where in general, I like to get along with a lot of people because it's a Christian worldview, and myself just being... the good definition of multicultural, right? Yeah. And when I lived in Geneva at my apartment on the weekends, the, you know, folks from the school would come and we'd have like a mini United Nations, everyone from all over the world on the balcony, and we're just, you know, partying. And but to your point, just going to black, I agree with, well, you know, I think I think it was David Hughes, I think you're talking about. So I think his Camp 3 thing is correct. His framework, but its application, like I'm more, and on different topics for different people, it's going to be different things. So yeah. Like for me, it's enough. The World Trade Center 7 nanothermite, like that's enough to explain there was a, because we all come to the same conclusion. There's a deep state. Yeah. They did it to establish the first layer of the New World Order. You know, COVID was the COVID 9/11 was the second layer of the biosecurity state. COVID 3.0, the Iran war, is the biodigital security state. So it's like we all understand it's the same end game. But then to use as another example, flat Earth. You know, I'm not if you're into that. You know, I'm not telling you. You know, go nuts with investigating flat Earth. You know, I'm talking to anyone out there. I personally don't believe it, and I'm personally not interested in pursuing that line of thought. Or, you know, let's use nukes as an example. That is something a bit more believable, that I could still see that nukes could not exist. But my argument here is there's a lot of armchair conspiracy theorists, and I've lived out there in the world. You know, I've shaken hands with Gorby in Moscow. I lived in Kazakhstan, in northern Kazakhstan, from 2017 to 2020. I technically was employed by Nursultan Nazarbayev, right? The first president of Kazakhstan. I worked at his Nazarbayev intellectual schools, of which there are 20 all over Kazakhstan. And I lived in Semey, which used to be called Semipalatinsk, which is like the dissident capital of Kazakhstan. Dostoevsky was sent as punishment for 5 years to live in Semey. I visited his house. And 100 clicks, 100 kilometers, 120 from Semey is something called the Polygon. It's an 18,000 square kilometer space, which was the Soviet Union's principal nuclear test site, where purportedly in 1949, Stalin dropped the first bomb there in Kazakhstan on the Polygon. And they did 500 tests. You know, after the 60s, they had to be underground tests because of the treaties, and until 1989, 90. And I actually trekked out to the Polygon. You know, I went to Kurchatov, where they have the institute. And then scientists, we drove like an hour or two in to a portion of the Polygon. And I saw they had mock underground metros. Like, you know, you could see that they were doing stuff. And I had my own two Geiger counters that I brought from abroad, and I stood on what was purportedly a ground zero. It was radioactive. They told us we can't be here long. And so I'm just kind of thinking, like, to spend so much money and infrastructure on all of this for it to be fake. And I kind of, on nukes, I kind of come to a middle conclusion where I think they do exist, but they often exaggerate, you know, the cold winter theory, that if nukes go off, it's going to create this radioactive cloud, and it's going to create a nuclear winter, and the sun will never come in, and we're all going to die. I think that's kind of like the climate change lie. So what I think nukes exist. They can cause mega death, right? Once they're dropped, you can wipe out a large swath of people, but the radiation, I think, dissipates quicker than they tell us. Because also in those villages in Kazakhstan, there were increased rates of cancer and things like that. So again, I think on some things, the truth is in the middle. And even the no virus stuff, you know, so the way people go about it is so aggressive. It's like, okay, can we be friends without me believing that particular thing? You know, and I always go back to an example I had in 2016 here in Mexico. I caught influenza or something. I was coughing up blood after 5 days and shivering. And I'm like, I got to go to the hospital. And elderly folks from our church took us to our hospital, because I'd never been to a hospital in Mexico. I didn't know what to do. You know, I thought I'm going to just rest, drink tea, vitamin C. 3 days becomes four, becomes five. I'm coughing up blood and I can't stop shivering. I'm like, okay, I got to go see a doctor. He injects me in my behind with antibiotics. He's like, you have influenza? And he injects antibiotics in my behind. And immediately I'm like born again. I'm like, let's go for tacos, guys. Like, I feel like whatever that was, that antibiotic cured me. And then the interesting thing is the next day, because we were in the car that was compact, that elderly couple, the old man, his wife, and his daughter both got influenza the next day. And I'm thinking, these no viruses are like, they say immune systems don't exist, some of them. There's no such thing as contagion or at all, or an infectious disease. And I'm like, and how do you explain this? And then they say they criticize the mainstream for not being able that the mechanism of transmission is false. And I'm like, okay, but then what was that experience? And they tell me, like, they can't explain it either. They're like, oh, it's just some frequencies or something. You know, I'm like, seriously? you know? And so anyways, that was my pot shot at the no viruses. But yeah, I think all of us should try and come together more than fight. Yeah.
You see, that's the perfect illustration of the kind of mindset. Sounds is actually the opposite of what I'm trying to describe, but I'm going to now park what you've said in my memory bank. You know, when I'm thinking about nukes, do they exist? And I'll set that against the stuff I know about Hiroshima and about my suspicions that it was a firebombing operation and the lack of nuclear fission in Hiroshima and so on, and the bizarre background that it was seems to be kind of a revenge attack by somebody called Baruch. I read the other day, and then I'm going to be thinking, well, Rovjit has told me something really interesting about his time in Kazakhstan, and it's enabled me to have a more nuanced view. I think most of us in this realm are like that. We want information. We want to be able to form a view based on people who are open-minded, or at least supple-minded, and who are pursuing the truth with integrity, without being imprisoned by their dogma. That's all we can ask. Because if the devil is, if Lucifer is the god of this world, I mean, number one, he's next level evil. Number two, he's been doing this stuff for a very long time. He's really, really good at it. Better than like anyone. I mean, he's brilliant. And where am I going with this one? This is what we're up against. And yet we've been given by God our own secret weapons, which is that the truth is we believe it's attainable and we believe it's important. And truth is an expression of God. So we've got this, like this weapon that we can use against the enemy. And he doesn't like, he seems to like operating in secrecy. He likes secret societies. He likes signs and symbols, occult-sided signs and symbols, which are not for everybody. They're for the select. So the stuff that people like you and me are doing, pursuing the truth and revealing it as best we can to our audiences, we're doing exactly what the enemy doesn't want. And so we're striking blows for God.
Yeah, and I mean, ultimately, as a Christian, I think the greatest point to for me to get out is, you know, the gospel of the Bible, sin and repentance, as well as, you know, all this other stuff that we're talking about, which is related, you know, globalism and all that. And I guess I'll just add that, you know, just on the nukes, for example, I've looked at some of the that Japan firebombing stuff. And it's interesting, you know, I think that's, I think there's so much nuance where that could have been a firebomb, but some type of nukes can also exist. And I've looked at the no virus stuff and, you know, I'm a no vaxxer. I'm a complete no vaxxer. My kids don't, we didn't even give our second kid the vitamin K shot or the drops in the eyes. You know, I don't think pandemics really are a thing at all. They're primarily manufactured, although I think you might have lower tier, you know, plagues over the ages. But my point is, I guess, on the one hand, we should try to get along as much as we can, but we also have to keep tabs on each other. And for me, the problem is when you have clear patterns of influence operations. Right, like when I mentioned that, where there's money being given to people or accounts that are being boosted, then we have to be like, okay, what's going on?
Totally
there. So again, it's kind of like a balance, and so I think it's a good thing we're all looking at each other. It's like, oh, that was cool, you know that podcaster or this podcaster. It's like, okay, that was interesting. There's a strange pattern behind your work. Can I ask you about that? You know, I, and so not jumping the gun, but just in the healthy way, And then once, kind of, I think you made it, maybe made the point earlier, if that person kind of reacts in a defensive way, and it's kind of like, okay, why are you reacting like that? You know, so.
Where are you on Candace?
Again, that's another thing where I make the point that each of us, yourself, myself, the plethora of other people out there, we only have enough bandwidth. Like, I got one brain to keep track of everything. And each of us has our own particular interests. Mine is often, you know, biblical, globalism, technocracy, geopolitics. And I don't have time, you know, I just never really listen to Candace because it's just not her thing is not my cup of tea. So I don't have time to listen to her and all of the other stuff that I listen to. So I haven't really been interested by her. I've had listeners tell me, get angry with me because I'm not a Candace fan. But I also, on my radar, she tends to be the what do you call it? The compass is a little bit more tilted towards, I'm a bit suspicious of her because she came out of nowhere and she, again, fantastic communicator.
She's got a huge, massive audience.
But even more unnerving is, you know, she quickly met some British royalty dude and, you know, was plugged into his George Farmer or something. And again, some of those connections are begin to become weird for me. So I've been using, because this is the latest example, Yuri Roshka for me is a great example because he's become a true dissident in the sense where he's lost everything, you know? And I prefer to listen to people who are like that, who've got everything to lose and in some case have lost everything versus people who have like Tucker or, you know, Alex Jones, like, oh, my family is all CIA. Andrew Tate's dad, CIA. Who are the other examples? You know, Tucker Carlson's dad, CIA. I'm like, okay, that's unnerving. But Yuri was in with the Russia crowd, with the Dugins. And then once he started questioning Kremlin globalism, they cut him off. And then his EU-controlled Western Moldovan government has now sentenced him to jail for 4 years on trumped-up charges. He's become persona non grata in both spaces. And then Peter Lavelle of RT, who I used to kind of be a fan of, he just commented on our interview and said that it was recorded in the mental institution. And I'm like, you're working for the Russian state. You get a posh apartment in Moscow. You know, you get to criticize the West all you want, but try criticizing Putin and see what happens, or the Kremlin. I mean, it's, again, you know, it's, so I guess going back to Candace, you know, it's just not my thing, my cup of tea.
What do you have? But what you're telling me is that you haven't got a view.
But my gut kind of would say, I'm not as trusting of her as I might be of other.
I think what you say about Yuri is true, that there is no greater badge of authenticity than becoming a dissident rejected by both sides where you've got nowhere to go and you lose everything. I think there are a lot of similarities between Christianity and being part of the kind of being awake, in that you're almost describing the awake community to version of going out to the desert and becoming a kind of living in a cave, and then you know that you're pure, but a lot of Christians have to live in the world and the world is full of temptations and everyone is compromised to a degree.
Yeah, I mean, this is why I say, let's tread carefully, nuance, balance. It's not all black and white. Someone was commenting the other day, they were criticizing Ice Age Farmer, a Christian Westerbrook who I've interviewed. You know, he came back as unshadowed, and they're criticizing him as, oh, he worked or works for Oracle. And I'm like, he's CIA, he's Larry Ellison. And I'm kind of like, well, technically I worked for the UN and EU. I'm a giga quadruple globalist, you know? So, I mean, there are well-meaning people who come out of that space, and there are also not well meaning people who pretend to come out of that space that are in that space. And so again, all I'm just sort of arguing is, let's all work together, but let's all still continue to ask questions of each other and test each other.
I think it's about context and discernment and intelligence. Yeah. Unfortunately, I've given up my morning cigarette for Lent, which means that in the evenings I very much look forward to my single cigarette, and it's now that time. So,
I saw you had Peter Duke on, I think, twice recently, and who am
I love
fan
Peter
of,
Duke.
So,
although I did have to your earlier point about Sir Escanor, who lives in Mexico.
I watched that last night, and I was initially a fan of some of his exposés of the Chinese professor, but I have to say it was absolutely blasphemous. You know, his thesis. So
you were going to very much he ambushed me with it. I had not been expecting that to be the conversation of the podcast, and I felt like I hadn't got enough ammunition I didn't know enough about this, you know, if somebody tells you they have mastered ancient Greek and this is what it says, if you don't have ancient Greek yourself and you haven't read the original, you're kind of limited as to what you can reply with. I've got a podcast coming out you're going to love with Alex Thompson, who does know and is just... I feel sorry for Sir Escanor, because it seems to me that to know all the stuff we know about the world and not have God as your refuge, it must be a very lonely and terrifying place.
Yeah, I've interviewed Alex a few years back, and we had a great discussion on world government and prophecy. But no, as you say, and I get the same criticisms, where you never know what a guest is going to say. And just from I'm like you in the sense where I like to talk to generally a wide spectrum of people. Like I've interviewed past like literal globalists, and I might be having one of them come back. He's the head of the European Council on Foreign Relations. He's got a new book, and he might be coming back. And I'm not averse to speaking to those kinds of people to hear where they're coming from. But I am increasingly drawing the line where I've said on my podcast, I'm increasingly wanting to toe the Christian line. I'm still talking to Marxists and people beyond, but if I know beforehand, I try not to platform people who are going to be spouting, virulent anti-Christian stuff.
Yeah. Do you know what? I'm happy that I had him on, because what it means is that it's... Without that one, I wouldn't have asked Alex to counter this stuff. So good comes out of this thing. I think it's good to have our faith tested.
And I was actually thinking after listening to yours, and again, some people have personally told me they've criticized you for doing that, and I think they are too legalistic. It's almost like thought police. I'm like, you can't tell me a Croat what to do or who to talk to, you know. And I have a similar approach to you, where it can be viewed, as you say, as beneficial. And this is what the apostles, like Paul, would go out into the agora and debate with the Gnostics and occultists, right? And I often assume my listenership is smart enough and discerning enough. I say, where the onus is on you. Look, I'm going to talk. I have my worldview. You know what it is. We're talking to this person, and you come to your own, you know, conclusion.
Yeah, I think that's it. It is about discernment. And I think, yeah, everyone thinks they've got it. Lots of people haven't got as much as they think. But I think generally, on balance, our audiences probably have more discernment than most. And actually, do you know what? I don't actually, if somebody, my view, I'm quite hardcore on that. I mean, like you said, I don't like being told what to do. Ultimately, my view is, if you are so undiscerning that you cannot see that I'm the real deal, if you are taken in by these demonic attacks on me or whatever, then you don't deserve to listen to me. I don't want your money. I don't want you. I don't want you. Your attention. You go away and you go and listen to TriggerPod or, you know, or whoever. Just piss off. Frankly, you are not worthy of me, and I'm not arrogant to think I'm really, really great. I don't think, you know, I'm just one among many. But if you buy into the nonsense people say about me, then go away. I'm not going to try and persuade you I'm okay. Just bugger off.
Well, I have the same approach. I mean, it's almost every week someone leaves comments that are disingenuous on the Substack notes or elsewhere, and I'll mute them. I mean, I'll appreciate people who are a bit adversarial, but have a inkling of truth in their constructive criticism, and I'm like, okay, we can meet there and talk about it. But if you just come from a completely disingenuous position, like, why are you even listening to me? And I like you, I never do that. If there's someone who I dislike, to spend energy to hate is kind of like, I'm just going to not listen to you and move on with my life.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And listen. And yeah. And so I'll just, yeah, I agree with your statement there. So
I'm glad we've put the world to rights. And let's have another chat sometime. And it's been great talking to you. Thank you. I have no doubt that you are the real deal. And yeah, it's been great. So tell people where they can find you.
Geopoliticsandempire.com, the website. I'm active on many socials platforms and Substack, geopoliticsandempire.substack.com. And I think we have a few common paid subscribers. I've had people tell me that they subscribe to James and Geopolitics and Empire. So there's a common...
So basically you're a rival that I should consider stabbing in the back.
Hey, you know, Stalin, you know, Trotsky, when he was living in Mexico, got the ice pick. Just, you know, don't do me like that.
No, I won't. It might be quite quick, actually.
I mean, I've actually, there's a blog, Blog del Narco, a Telegram channel where you can watch, I've watched them burn people alive in barrels and blow their heads off with high-powered machine guns. That was actually not a bad way to go, because your head is blown off, you're gone. And
that's great. We should be so lucky.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. It's been great. And we'll do another one. Thank you.
Oh, James.